Well, good evening, everybody. You're really welcome to worship here at Carmoney. It's our 6:30 service. And if you've been following with us over the last number of weeks, you would know that we've been looking at a theme called new. We like to keep things simple at Carmoney, so, you know, new. It's about as easy as it gets. Michael started 2 weeks ago with the theme of new life, that there is a new life available in Jesus. It's not simply a redirection or a reorientation. It is an entirely new life when we come to faith in him. And then last week, Dad carried this on as we dug into what the nature of a new life looked like, that to experience new life is to become new wine, unable to be held in the old wineskins or patterns of this life. What we hold is a new life in us that is tireless, a living, breathing, changing thing that is always new. And that brings us to today. We finish off the series today before we get into kind of the meat of our themes through the autumn. And as we get to tonight, tonight's theme is really simply new name, new name. You know, as a church, this last month has been a real kind of time of newness, all right? There's been so much going on in our midst, new buildings, new ministries, new discipleship groups. Everything, it feels like, has been a new thing over the last while. And along with that, it has just been the most incredible privilege to be around the place. You know, we went from the kind of moldy office upstairs where it was cold and all of that stuff to do you know what the first thing I had to do every week? I like to tell people, they illustrate how rubbish our office was before. My first thing on Tuesday morning when I came into work was I had to brush the dead flies off my desk, right? So we went from that to that pimp ship in there with, like, you know, the big glass windows and everything. It's incredible. What I should say is that what it has brought with us is that we are now the parking adjudicators, all right? Because we can see all your parking. There's some particularly appalling parking going on in this church, but anyway, we'll come back to that. Photos will be issued and dealt out on social media. But there's been lots of new in our midst. And it's been an incredible life-giving time to be part of our church. My name is Dave. I'm the worship associate at Carnmoney. And I'm not speaking today because, unfortunately, we wrote it on the wrong Dickinson, okay? It wasn't a spelling mistake, all right? I am actually meant to be up here. I'm up here because on the 19th of October, I will lead a team of people from this church who go to plant the church into the Cathedral Quarter of Belfast. Don't worry, it's not some sort of rebellion or coup d'etat that I've launched against my dad and this church, all right? It's not like that. We're going as a community of our church to plant a new community into the city center. It is not my thing. It's not our team's thing. It is our thing. And I want to say that from the start, because there were lots of very concerned people after this morning's service that felt we were breaking away. We're not breaking away. This is a plant from this church. It belongs to this church as we go to do that. And it's perhaps the most new thing that we're doing in this season. It feels really out there for us. As the person that's kind of responsible for it at the start, I'm massively excited and petrified at the same time of going to lead this. But I know that it's something that God has been on our case about as a church and on my case as an individual about for really quite some time. So I feel like we're walking in the direction that God is calling us to do. You know, we go as disciples on mission. We go to try and see worship, community, and witness rise up in the lives of people in the rhythm of the city, and we go to reach those who live, work, and relate to the city of Belfast. That's what we feel we're going to do. And as I said at the start, we don't go alone, because we go as part of this church, and we go under all of your encouragement, support, and partnership as we do this. We go because we have a new name. And if you'd like to read along with me, the scripture is going to be on the screens. It's from Isaiah 62. Let's read this together. Regarding Zion, I can't keep my mouth shut. Regarding Jerusalem, I can't hold my tongue. Until her righteousness blazes down like the sun and her salvation flames up like a torch. Foreign countries will see your righteousness and world leaders your glory. You'll get a brand new name straight from the mouth of God. You'll be a stunning crown in the palm of God's hand, a jeweled gold cup held high in the hand of your God. No more will anyone call you rejected, and your country will no more be called ruined. You'll be called Hephzibah and your land Beulah, because God delights in you, and your land will be like a wedding celebration. For as a young man marries his virgin bride, so your builder marries you. And as a bridegroom is happy in his bride, so your God is happy with you. And we thank God for his word. Names are a big deal. Names are a big deal. Solomon, perhaps the wisest man who ever lived, in Proverbs 22 said, "A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches." And as somebody who is now on the 7-week countdown to the birth of our first child, I am probably more aware than many people in this room that names are a big deal, right? When you're in that stage, names really are quite important. But for many of us, we don't really even think about our names in our day-to-day lives, do we? You don't think about, "Well, my name is this, therefore." It doesn't really affect us 90% of the time. But for some people, names affect them profoundly. On the 24th of July, 2008, a New Zealand court ruled that the parents of a 9-year-old girl should lose custody of their child because of the name that they had given her. And what was her name? Tallulah Does the Hula from Hawaii. This is not a joke, like this is a real court case, okay? Tallulah Does the Hula from Hawaii. In his closing statements, Judge Rob Murfitt said, "The court is profoundly concerned about the very poor judgment that this child's parents have shown in choosing this name, Tallulah Does the Hula from Hawaii." However, the staggering thing about this is that in the notes, if you read through the court case, in the notes, the judge validates some other names that he did allow to stand, okay, or other judges had allowed to stand at various other stages. Now, you ready for these? Twins called Benson and Hedges, a girl called Midnight Chardonnay, and a boy called Number 16 Bus Shelter. This is not a joke. These are real people's names. So the moral of the story is New Zealand is a mental place, okay? But names are a big deal, especially if your name is Tallulah Does the Hula from Hawaii. And in the passage we read just a few moments ago, we see that the prophet Isaiah is telling the city, Jerusalem, that God is going to give them a brand new name. It's going to come straight from his mouth. It's going to be a brand new name. And I want us this evening, just really quickly, to think about three things we can draw from this passage that I think are speaking to us all now. As we wrap up this series, as we open up new halls, as we launch all of the many ministries that are about to kick off or have just kicked off, as we move into a new season as a church and as we kick off a church plant, there's three things I think that God is saying to us right now that mean we have a new name. And the first is that we get a new title. We get a new title. The last time you filled in your Amazon order or a form somewhere, I'm fairly sure that the first thing you will have filled in when you did it was your title. It will have had, you know, that little box, Mr., Mrs., Miss, Doctor, all of that sort of thing. And when you think about it, titles are, by and large, the part of our name that is given to us. You know, I never got asked to be called a Mr., but I am Mr. David Dickinson. Next time I go to my doctors, they will say, "Mr. David Dickinson, the doctor will see you now." Mr., it is the name that is given to us. It's not the only type of names that are given to us. Dad mentioned a number of weeks ago that there's this amazing thing about becoming the President of the United States of America, which is that for the rest of your life, even when you stop serving as the President, you are called Mr. President. It's given to you as a title. They are the names that are given to us. And another type of name that's very often given to us like a title is a nickname. When I was in school, in my first year in BRA, I met a rather strange teenage boy called Craig Hunter. All right, I think we can all admit he was a bit strange. Craig became one of my best friends all the way through school. But in our kind of first 2 years, I don't really know at what point it happened, but at some point in those first couple of years, Craig suddenly became known as Gwail, okay? It's a rather strange nickname, but that was his nickname, okay? I don't really necessarily know how it happened, but my kind of patching together of the story is that one day somebody told him, "You know what, you don't look like a Craig, you look like a Gilbert." And so somebody started calling him Gilbert, and then we were studying French together, and so we thought we were really smart and funny. We started to call him Gwilbert, because it sounded French. And then, you know, we just got sick of that, so we just shortened it to Gwil. And the funny thing is that for the whole rest of his time in school, Craig was known as Gwail, right? Everybody knew him as Gwail. He's called Gwail. Lots of you all know that about 2 years ago, Craig really sadly passed away. But even in the midst of what was a really difficult day at his funeral, I couldn't help but kind of chuckle to myself every so often when somebody who had went to school with us approached, you know, on a really kind of solemn occasion and said, "Dave, I'm really sorry to hear about Gwail." And it's kind of this funny thing about nicknames every so often, isn't it? That sometimes they stick. that sometimes the titles stick. I was catching a flight to London about 2 years ago, and I kind of arrived up at the international airport, walked through to the, you know, kind of obligatory Starbucks that, you know, you all go to, and I sat down at Starbucks, realized that my friend Jasper was on the same flight, so we were sitting talking about, you know, what we're going to be doing in London and all of that sort of stuff, and eventually, you know, the screen comes and says your gate is 10C or whatever it is, so we proceed to our gate, we join a queue, eventually the queue gets through to the end, and I get to the EasyJet lady, show her my boarding pass and my passport, walk through, and I go to turn to talk to Jasper and realize Jasper's in there. At which point I'm beginning to think, actually, has Jasper lied to me his whole life and he's actually a terrorist? But it turns out that he's not a terrorist. I turned around and I sort of overheard the lady begin to speak, and the lady says, "Sir, we have an issue here. This boarding pass is for a Jasper Rutherford." And he goes, yeah, it's for Jasper. And the girl says, "Yeah, sir, but the problem is that your passport says Jason Rutherford." Now, Jasper Rutherford, okay, that lots of you will know, he heads up Summer Madness, which is the largest youth event in Ireland, and everybody knows him as Jasper. You know, he gets however many speaking engagements every year, and Jasper Rutherford, the speaker, Jasper Rutherford from Church Army, Jasper Rutherford from Summer Madness, you know, that's all you ever hear. Jasper isn't actually called Jasper, it turns out. Jasper is actually called Jason. But at some point in his teenage years, his mates from Antrim called him Jasper, and for the whole rest of his life, the name Jasper has stuck. Because sometimes the nicknames stick. And sometimes the titles stick enough that you start to use them for yourself. Verse 2 in the passage, "Foreign countries will see your righteousness, and world leaders your glory. You'll get a brand new name straight from the mouth of God." And then on in verse 4, "No more will anyone call you rejected, and your country will no more be called ruined." You know, I'm fairly sure that Jerusalem never called itself rejected. I'm pretty sure that Jerusalem never wanted to be known as ruined. If the language is anything to be believed from that passage when it says, "No more will anyone call you," then it's pretty clear that that's how some people knew it. Rejected, ruined. Sometimes the title sticks. I remember Rick Hill speaking here in church before about Antrim and the fact that the feeling in Antrim was that it was a city that everybody passes through or passes by, but nobody stays. I remember Alan Emerson talking about Craigavon as the city that failed, the venture that failed. It's a city that failed. And sooner or later, those places in some way started to accept or take hold of the titles that were given to them, even though that wasn't their name. They held on to titles that stuck. And when we think about our lives, it's the same for us, really, isn't it? Sometimes the titles stick. For some people, I said this in this morning's sermon, and my brother-in-law Phil reacted at the dinner table and said, "No, Dave, it's only people like you that think like this." But for some people in here, you start to believe your own boast sometimes, don't you? That conversation you have with yourself in the shower when you get up in the morning, and I know that lots of you have that conversation in the shower, you know, you get up like, "I'm going to kill it today, like, I'm the best," you know. That conversation, you talk yourself up, feel really good about yourself in the shower, you know. You've just come off, you've wakened up, you've went on Facebook or Instagram, you've read motivational quotes, you know, you get up and you're like, "I'm the 1%, they're the 99, you know, all that sort of cack. You've got up and you started to believe that yourself. And not only have you started to believe it, but it started to become an attitude in your life. And now you sit high and you look down at everybody else around you. And I think that for people, or if that's you tonight and you're in that moment, I think God wants to say that he's got a new title for you. It's one of humility. It's one that knows you're broken. You're busted up just like everybody else is, but you've been wonderfully saved by grace and sent to show that grace to the world that is around you. But I think for other people in here tonight, the title is much more of a negative format. I can't tell you how many Alpha weekends I've been on where we get to the Saturday night, we get to the ministry time, and as you've been standing waiting to pray for people, somebody comes up to you and they're broken, usually tearful. They're really upset, they're desperate. And they come up to you because they've been carrying around a title that somebody's given them that the enemy has just gone to work on at some stage. And in my experience of learning what it is the enemy says to people, it's nearly always the same thing that he says to you, that he says to me, that he says to everybody else. And it's really simple. He says that you're no good, you never were any good, and you never will be. And at some point, that the title that somebody gave you or something that somebody said to you has stuck, and the enemy's got to work at it and he's twisted it, and all of a sudden you've started to take hold of it for yourself in your life. Now, I believe that God wants to come tonight and he wants to change those titles for you too. I believe that new name means new title. And that maybe you've believed for too long the lie that's been told that you're no good, that you're bankrupt, that you're overweight, or you're ugly, or you're useless, or you're a liar, or you're alone, and you're always going to be alone. I believe that God wants to come and he wants to undo those tonight, because new name means new title. But secondly, new name means new purpose. New name means new purpose. As I mentioned earlier on, we're on the countdown to the birth of our child, and so names have been a lot on our agenda, okay? There's several members of our band, Greg and Stuart, and, you know, I really need to disappoint them that if we have a boy, it won't be getting called Greg or Stuart, okay? And as I said earlier on this morning too, it's not getting called John either, all right? Feel it's quite, you know, cathartic to get this all out. You know, you've all witnessed that now. So it's not going to be called any of those names. But one of the things that cracks me up most that people say in the world, okay, is when normally you approach what looks like, you know, a large crowd of, you know, normally women, okay, gathered around a newborn baby, okay, and what you will hear almost certainly from one of them is the phrase, "Oh, he looks just like a Harry." What does that mean? How can you look like a Harry? It's not possible to look like a Harry. That is not a thing, okay? How do I look like a David? Right? You can't look like a David. I mean, David Suchet is a David. David Cameron is a David. David Beckham, though I'll take that one, is a David, right? It's not possible to look like a David. Maybe actually you're saying that because you're very in the know and you know what people's names mean, okay? Maybe that's the reason. As we alluded today, we were talking about this after I'd been speaking, and my brother-in-law, Phil, whilst we were sitting around at the dinner table, discovered that his name meant lover of horses. Epic, right? Lover of horses. So the next time you see Phil, if you know Phil, ask him how he's getting on with his love of horses. Anyway, but if you are knowledgeable about names, you'll know that David means beloved. So I'll leave that up to you to decide whether that's been well chosen. David means beloved, okay? Or if you don't like that definition, here's what that well-known source of knowledge, the Urban Dictionary, has to say about the name David, okay? David means a formidable foe to normal people, intelligent, strong, and forceful, a weird hybrid of a bully and a nerd, as well as the first dictator of the America and the king of the new peaceful world, also known as Time Bomb. I'll leave that up to you to decide. Perhaps my dad, my wife, could tell you if that's a better description of who I am. But when I arrived in today, I said to you, when I introduced myself, that, "Hi, my name is Dave." And nobody here even batted an eyelid that I introduced myself as Dave. But I've been speaking at all three services today, and at the 11 o'clock service this morning, there was one person who batted an eyelid whenever I said, "Hi, my name is Dave." And that person's my mom. And along with being the only person in the known world who leaves voicemail messages, my mom is also the only person in the known world who calls me David every single time. It doesn't matter whether it's a trivial thing like, you know, "Your dinner's ready, David," or she's, you know, just in conversation. It's never shortened to Dave, ever, or any of the other nicknames, Dicko, or any of that other people might call me. Never, ever, ever. It's always David. Why? Because that's the name she chose. She didn't choose Dave. She didn't choose any of those other nicknames. She chose the name David. That's what she wanted to call me. It meant a lot to her when she did it. And so she's continued, even though lots of other people haven't, to call me that. She continues to call me David because it's the chosen name that she gave to me. And chosen names are really important in the Bible too. You know, when you're doing a Bible in 1 year, type study. Maybe some of you have done that before, or you've kind of just decided, you know, oh, well, you know, in this period of time, I want to get through the whole Bible. The worst part, you know, all of Scripture is gold, okay? But the hardest part, let's say that, is when you get to Chronicles, right? Because then you get those big lists, you know, Hephzibah, son of da 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 da. You know, it goes like this for about like 20 chapters, okay? And eventually, you know, I know, I mean, we all do this. Those are the chapters you're skimming, right? You know, you kind of, yeah, got through that. Chronicles, great, yeah, done. Next. But we all do that because it's like exhausting. But the one thing it does illustrate is those are in there for a reason. Those names, that lineage, they're there for a reason. They were important enough for them to be chronicled, for them to be written in. They're important because names are important. Often because they denoted qualities, or they denoted occupation, or because they were prophetic, or to denote a family connection, or because God changed someone's path, they were in there, but it was always for a purpose. Names were given for a purpose. Verses 3-5, you'll get a brand new name straight from the mouth of God. You'll be a stunning crown in the palm of God's hand, a jeweled gold cup held high in the hand of your God. No more will anyone call you rejected, and your country will no more be called ruined. You'll be called Hephzibah, and your land Beulah. And on to verse 6 and 7, this time from the Message. I've posted watchmen on your walls, Jerusalem. They will never be silent, day or night. You who call on the Lord, give yourself no rest, and give him no rest till he establishes Jerusalem and makes her the praise of the earth. You see, new name means new purpose. This city, known as rejected, known as ruined, gets a new name and a new purpose. The praise of the earth. The praise of the earth. You see, that's what God does, doesn't he? He comes and he gives new titles. He turns around broken to made whole and lost to find. And then he gives us new purposes in our lives. On the 19th of October, at 7:30 p.m., we gather in the Mac in Belfast for our first evening as a church plant, and you are all invited. I say you're all invited, but we haven't got room for you all. So, and actually, given that I've said that three times today, we definitely don't have room for you all, all right? There's some conditions. We'll tell you about those later on. But you're invited, okay, to what we're doing in the city center. We're really excited to be planting this church, and we need your help, we need your prayers, we need your partnership for us to be able to do this as a team sent from this congregation. But as the person leading it, you know, some of you may feel tonight that, you know, of course, you're John's son, you're a minister's son, of course you're going to go plant a church, you know, jobs for the boys and all that, of course that's what you're going to do. But the reality is that it wasn't always like that for me. I don't remember a time in my life when I didn't feel that I had an awareness of God in my life. You know, his presence around me, his guidance in my path, the truth of his word. I don't really remember a time when I was without that, when I was without a feeling or just a reality that I knew God was there, I knew God was real, I knew he was around me. But then it all came together for me when I was about 14 at a football camp in Lucan, just outside Dublin. It all became real, and I decided that that was the moment in my life that not only did I know he was real and know he was living, but I wanted him to live in me. And I made a commitment to follow Jesus when I was about 14. But what followed for the better part of my teenage and young adult life was that I raged against the very notion of working for the church, right? Those of us that have grown up in a manse, of which there's some here, will have known only too well the heavy, heavy cost that people in ministry pay. The pain, the difficulty, the hard conversations, the cost. I knew that really well, and part of me raged against that hugely. That's probably why I decided to study law, right? Because you can't get much further away from church is the law. But then God started to work in my life. It started with a vision that I felt I got whenever the Alpha Northern Ireland job came along, and I never wanted to work for Alpha, but all of a sudden I got this kind of vision, this heart for what it was, and I started to work for Alpha, and over those 8 years of working for Alpha, what I actually found was that God wasn't just moving me towards working for a parachurch organization. What God was calling me to do was to work for the church. And I found something shifted in my heart, my mind started to change. And I came to realize that actually the thing that I really longed for, the thing that I was really in love with, was, of all things, the church. I loved the church. I was all in for the church. And that's what I knew that I was to do. I've known it for a while. I've been carrying it around for a little while. That's my purpose. And it's personal, you know. It's quite like a chosen name. Because God does his work up close and personal with us, doesn't he? He doesn't do it around us. He doesn't do it in spite of us. He doesn't kind of dodge the difficult areas of your life. He doesn't cherry pick your best moments and say, no, I'm not going to be there in your worst. He doesn't say in the fruitful seasons of your life, well, now I'll use you. But actually, when you're in a difficult season, I don't use you then. That's not what God does. God does the personal thing. So Jesus is with the crowd, and he's walking. And as he's passing, he sees Zacchaeus, this kind of tiny little greedy tax collector that everybody hates, up a tree. And if you've read the story, what you'll know is that Jesus then says to Zacchaeus, you know, come down, Zacchaeus, I'm going to your house for dinner. He goes to Zacchaeus' house for dinner. There's lots of his friends there. And at some stage during that, as they talk, Jesus leads Zacchaeus to faith. And then after he does it, Zacchaeus responds and he gives away all of what he's taken from other people. He gives it all back. But you got to ask yourself the question, especially if you're in ministry. That's not what I would have done. You know, if I'm Jesus, I lead him to faith right there, up the tree, you know, where everyone can see it, where everybody knows, where it kind of looks like an example of what Jesus can do, where everybody is forced to look on and go, man, that guy's a cast that nobody likes. You just led him to faith. But that's not what Jesus does. Jesus does something more personal. Or in Luke 8, Jesus is preaching and he's ministering. And whilst walking through the crowd, a woman afflicted with hemorrhages just reaches out and grabs the edge of his robe as he's passing by, and instantly she's healed. And what does Jesus do again? Well, I mean, if that's me, right, I'm like celebrating, you know. I'm like, just healed that woman, didn't even have to look. You know, I'm like hands in the air celebrating how great I am. But not Jesus, right? Jesus says, whoa, stop. Who touched me? And the disciples say, well, you know, there's hundreds of people here, Jesus. Lots of people have touched you. No. It's not anyone. Someone touched me. Power went from me. I want to know who it was. And they wait and all of that until eventually the woman comes forward. Jesus gets face to face with her, tells her to go on her way, and pronounces her healed and whole. You know, he does it more personally. Or at the Great Commission, even when Jesus is doing big vision stuff, you know, big, go into all nations, make disciples stuff, as big as it gets. At the very end of the passage, even then, he doesn't just leave it with the big stuff. He says, and surely I am with you to the very end of the age. He does the personal thing with us. That's what he does. I mean, listen to the language of verses 3-5, and he's talking about a city. He's talking about a people. You'll be a stunning crown in the palm of God's hand, a jeweled gold cup held high in the hand of your God. You'll be called my delight. And there's not that many people in your world that you call your delight, or things that you call your delight. It's as personal as it gets. Intimate, personal language, because new name equals new purpose, and it's a personal purpose. And there's something so incredible about the God that we worship, that he works out his purposes on this earth, not in spite of us or around us or on a tangent or without us, but rather he works out his purposes through us, fears and failures and doubts and brokenness and sin and all of the cack. He does it right through that stuff in our lives, that God chooses us and he chooses to do his mission in the world through us. He does the personal thing. Now, I believe that God is calling us in Carmoney right now, that our purpose is not just to be one church, but our purpose is to be lots of churches. this church plant is the first one at this current season that'll go, but I don't believe it is the last one. I don't believe it's the last one that he's calling us to. You know, all of this energy, people, things that are being drawn to us at the minute are not just for us to be able to say, great, the church is full, brilliant, we're having a great time. It's for a purpose. And I believe that that purpose is to plant lots of other churches. You know, I was preparing these notes and I sent them to my dad to have a look at just so you know, none of you were getting preached heresies today. And he looked through it all and he came back and said, you know, son, there's one issue in that. And I was getting ready for it to be something I'd said about someone else. But actually, he said, you know, you're wrong when you say this will be the first church plant that Carmoney will plant. Because in the 360-year history of Carmoney Presbyterian Church, virtually every other Presbyterian church in Newton Abbey was birthed from this place. Virtually every single one, of which the last was New Mosley. It's not something new for us as a congregation, but I believe it's something that God is calling us to all over again, to recapture that adventurous, daring spirit, to step out in faith in the knowledge that not only has God called us to it and God is going ahead of us, but that he's done it before here. That however many churches in Newton Abbey exist and however many people's lives have been transformed because this place got a vision, people went from it, they planted something in his name, and it grew and all the rest that followed. And I believe that we each have a part to play in that too, you know. I hear so often from people when they come to faith, they get the title, Christian, you know, they get that part, but then they're just like, I don't know what to do with it. I don't know what I'm meant to do. And fairly certainly what will happen next is we'll be running an event or something will be going on. They'll get an opportunity to come and serve in that event. They grab hold of it. They may be serving that. Some people serve in those areas for the rest of their life. Lots of people serve in all sorts of different things. But for many of them, even in the midst of that, they don't know what they're meant to do. Maybe you've been hearing about the church plant today, or as we've kind of been talking about it a little up to now, and you've been getting excited about it, you know. You've been listening to this talk tonight. You thought, like, yes, I want to be part of that. I want to do that. That's exactly what I want to give my life to at this stage in my life. Or maybe it's something else that God has been working on in you for some time. Maybe it's been since we've opened the halls and there's been new opportunities to serve, new things to do, all of that stuff. And over the last number of weeks, you felt the pull in your life of something that you're meant to be doing with yourself. Maybe it's been a much, much longer thing. Something that you know has just kind of always been there, chipping away at your heart. You know that you're meant to give yourself to, but you can't. And every time you talk about it, it lights you up. You know, it's that thing people will often come and say, you know, I just don't know what I'm meant to do. And then you get talking to them and they'll get talking about their job and they're kind of like, yeah, well, you know, work's fine. You know, it's 9 to 5 and, you know, my boss is a bit hard on me and, you know. Blah, blah. But football on a Tuesday night was amazing, man. And, you know, you realize the more they talk about it, actually what they're really passionate about is football or it's photography or it's graphic design or it's working with kids or it's sport of some description. What you realize is that something else lights them up. And maybe you've had one of those things in your life for a little while. Your friends may be able to point that out to you, that you have an awareness of something that you're meant to do with your life. And maybe this is the moment tonight that you commit yourself to that purpose for the days that are ahead. Because new name means new title, and new name means new purpose. But finally, new name means new identity. New identity. I remember seeing a photo not so long ago of Sergio Aguero, the Manchester City forward. He's like the best player in the league, really famous. And it was a photo of him standing holding his newborn baby son. And under that photo was the meme, your dad is Sergio Aguero, your grandfather is Diego Maradona, your godfather is Lionel Messi. Good luck, son. No pressure. Because sometimes in life, you know, there's like this inherent pressure because of things like a family name. And if our identity is wrapped up in our names, particularly if they're famous ones, it's never a good thing. You just need to look at the wreckage and the ruin of the lives of sons and daughters of so many famous people who couldn't carry the weight of the name and all of the stuff that comes along with it in their lives. There's so much confusion over identity when it's wrapped up in names. I mean, could you imagine what it would be like right now if you carried the surname Trump? or if you carried the surname Clinton. Could you imagine how different your life would have been if your surname was Beckham or, you know, Gates or something like that? You would have had a totally different life. A couple of years ago, I was getting a taxi home from Belfast, and I was doing the usual taxi talk, okay? Everybody's got the taxi talk, all right? So, you know, how's your day been? Yeah, all right. Have you had any mental people in your taxi tonight? You know, no, it's been pretty quiet. What time are you on till? We all do it, don't we? So I'm kind of giving it the normal drill. The taxi journey at this point is going fine, as far as taxi journeys go. At which point, the guy who's in front of me looks up and sees on his little, you know, monitor thing that they have on value cabs, other taxi services are available. He looks up at his little thing, sees the thing, and sees the name Dickinson, right? And he kind of looks around and goes, Dickinson, all right, here, not Dickinson the minister, is it? At which point I go, yeah, actually it is. Now, what followed was 20 minutes of this guy waxing lyrical about how much he loved the Reverend Dickinson, okay? Like, I mean, this guy is going for it. Like, Reverend Dickinson, great man of God. Oh, you know, brilliant preacher. Reverend Dickinson, great man. And this is, like, going on and on and on. So much so that I think, like, I'm about to get a free fare, right? Like, I'm believing I'm going to get adopted into this guy's family as his new son. He loves the Reverend Dickinson so much, okay? And this is going on and on and on. And just then, we started to approach the house. And he turns around at that point and says, actually, now that I think about it, there's a bunch of them Dickinson brothers who are all reverends, aren't there? Now, there's one of them isn't really my cup of tea. Which one's son are you? Now, at this point, okay, I'm beginning to, like, you know, you're making a call in your head. You're like, what is this guy, like, what's his tone been like? You know, I'm also really aware that we've just pulled outside our house. So I'm like, you know, if this guy really doesn't like this Reverend Dickinson, like, he's going to put our windows in or something. But eventually I think, no, I'll just tell him the truth. So I say, oh, yeah, my dad's John. Silence. And the only thing that follows is, as he says, oh, that'll be 20 quid, son. End of discussion. I pay him my 20 quid. I get out of the car quickly and the car speeds off away. Because names are important, aren't they? Unfortunately, I I'm a son of the wrong Dickinson for that guy, as far as he's concerned. Surnames are important. And when we wrap our identity up in those names, all it leads to is confusion. You know, our identity is found in Jesus and Jesus alone. When we give our lives to him, we get new titles, from lost to found, from broken to made whole, redeemed. And not only do we get new titles, but we get new purposes too. From boasting to humble, directionless to sent, generous in spirit, abounding in love. We get new purposes in our lives. And a new name means a new identity too, in that we belong to Jesus. You know, so many people that I meet, you know, they get the title part. They get, you know, I'm saved. I'm a Christian. They get that part in their life. They understand that bit in their life. And they get the purposes thing. They get, you know, I've got some stuff to do. If I believe in Jesus, there's something to do. So many of them serve in areas for so long and for so long and for so long. But the thing is that if you don't get the identity, the title and the purposes don't work. If you don't get the identity, if you don't get who you are in Jesus, if you don't get what you carry in Jesus, the title and the purposes don't work. You know, you can be called something, but you're not it. So you could be called a Christian, but actually, if you're honest, you haven't felt God, you haven't had any awareness of God in your life, and you've read the scriptures, it's felt pretty empty, and you've been going through the motions for a very long time. You can say, I've got purpose and direction in God, but the reality is you've been serving in an area for so long, and if you realize, you realize deep down that actually that's not what you're meant to do with your life. There's something else for you, but you just keep going and keep doing it, and actually God has purposes for you, because if you don't get the identity, if you don't get that you belong to him, if you don't get that that's who you are, the title and the purposes don't work out. Sooner or later, the wheels come off. Because the identity is the thing. Right at the end of Isaiah 62, we read this. The Lord has made proclamation to the ends of the earth. Say to daughter Zion, see, your Savior comes. See, his reward is with him and his recompense accompanies him. They will be called the holy people, the redeemed of the Lord, and you will be called sought after, the city no longer deserted. Holy people, redeemed of the Lord, sought after. We belong to him. We belong to him. And we can take great confidence in that, you know. Great confidence in the fact that there's no other name than the name of Jesus that we as a church belong to. That our identity is not rooted in a past. That our identity is not rooted in a denomination. That our identity is not rooted in the names that we might be getting called by other people or the names that we're calling ourselves. It's not even rooted in the practices and the things that we do, the halls that we have, the buildings, the staff. That is not what our identity is rooted in as a church. Our identity is rooted in Jesus. And it is the most liberating thing in the world to be in the knowledge that, as Galatians 5 says, it was for freedom that Christ has set us free. Free from every other name that has been put on us as individuals. Free from every other name that we've picked up and we've decided to take on ourselves. Free from every other title that the enemy has twisted in our lives to make us believe for ourselves or has stuck to us. We are a holy people, redeemed of the Lord, sought after. We're his. And we are to be and do only what he calls us to do. If we're his, we do what he calls us to do. And what is that? To go into all the world and to make disciples. You know, I believe this is a massively important moment for us as a congregation. I think lots of us can see that we're in a moment. You can see from kind of the energy around the church, from the things that are going on, from people coming to faith and ministries, you know, kind of filling up with people, that we're in a moment as a church with so much new and so much excitement and so much life around us. It would be so easy for us to sit down at the end of this church here and to look at all of our records, you know, money, attendances, organizations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and see that all are up, because I'm sure that they're all going to be up, and think that, yeah, we've done real good this year, haven't we? Everything's full. We've done great this year. And to do that would be wrong. To do that would be wrong. Because actually, I think this is a moment for us to recommit ourselves again to be a church family on mission as disciples who make disciples and to know that no other metric matters in our midst. It's not numbers. It's not money. It's the fact that God has called us to be a people and to be a community of disciples who make disciples, who make disciples, who make disciples. And if we're not seeing that, we're not being the thing that God is calling us to be. We failed. We could have a full building and that isn't happening. And we failed. And I believe really strongly that this is a moment of recommitment for us as a church fellowship. And as a church plant, you know, I'm really aware at this moment in time that we need to be upfront about the fact that it's in Jesus' name that we go under. We've been meeting this as team, and one of the things we've been talking about is the real challenge of talking about Jesus, just being upfront about Jesus. I was cycling with a guy recently, and he's not a Christian, and we were kind of cycling along, and it was going great, and he asked me, we kind of got to that phase where people are asking what they do and how's your week going and all that sort of stuff, and he says, you know, and what about you, what about the church plant, because we've been talking about that a little bit. I don't know that he even knows what a church plant is, but anyway, how's the church plant going? Why are you doing the church plant? And now I've got one of those split-second moments where I can kind of botch together a question, you know, that sounds really churchy. Like, oh, well, you know, I've kind of, yeah, like I'm part of the church. Like, I like the church. And so, you know, I thought I would plant a church. But actually, this kind of thing went to my head and said, you know, you're not to say that. You need to call it as it is. So I said to him, you know, well, I've got a relationship with Jesus. And I believe Jesus has a plan and a purpose for my life. And this was the thing that I felt for quite a while he was calling me into. And my friend just went, oh, and put his head down. But there's like this thing, I think, especially whenever we think about the city. Those of you that have done our Alpha courses in Belfast know how hard it is, how cringy sometimes you feel whenever you've just got to be upfront about the fact that Jesus has done a thing in your life. that Jesus has changed your life, that you believe Jesus still changes lives, that you believe he's the name above every other name, that you believe that he is the one who heals, that you believe that he's the one who brings true purpose and meaning to people's lives. And that's what we believe we're going to do. As a church plant, we need to be upfront about the fact that we go in his name. And we're committing from the start to be a people who exist to be disciples, who make disciples in the rhythm of the city. And tonight, maybe this is an opportunity for you to decide that you would like to be part of that. But also to this church, I believe right at this moment, that this moment of opportunity, God is calling us back to himself again, to draw close to him again, to be a church who stand for worship, community, and witness. That's our vision statement. That's our purpose. That's what we believe we're here for. And I believe it's a moment for us again to reestablish in our life a reality and a vision for worship, community, and witness here in Newton Abbey and further afield into Belfast and onwards, to hold those values closer than we ever have before and to evaluate how we're doing based on those, not on anything else. Not on what we've always done, not on how many people are coming, to evaluate them based on worship, community, and witness. And you could be part of that too. And as individuals, you know, not just as the plant, not just as this church, I believe that God is talking to each of us tonight in this season. And I believe he's asking us each once more, how are you doing with your relationship with God? Really, how are you doing with God? When was the last time you experienced his Holy Spirit? When was the last time you felt him close to you? When was the last time you felt the movement of God in your life and through you? When was the last time scripture spoke to you and changed an attitude or something in your heart? How are you doing with God? Secondly, how are you doing with your relationships with the church community? Do you belong here? Do you belong elsewhere, but you've been coming here because you're not fulfilled elsewhere for 1,000 reasons, but actually, how are you doing with your church community? Do you have relationships that will last? Or are you, as Michael said, are you in community but completely disconnected? Are you present but not present? How are you doing with your relationships? And finally, how are you helping your world encounter the God who lives in you? When was the last time you had a God conversation with someone? You know, one of those conversations in the workplace or with family or with friends where somebody asked, you know, why are you that way? Or somebody started to open up about something in their life. When was the last time that happened with you? Is that happening at all? Do you want it to happen at all? Is it a passion or a purpose or a direction in your life? Up, in, and out. How are you doing? I believe God is speaking to us as a plant, to us as a church, main church, all of us together, and to us as individuals tonight about that. I'm just going to ask the band to come just as we come to the end of this. But I believe this has been a really kind of significant season for us. I know this kind of little section of themes has been really short. You know, we've only done new wine, new life, new wine, new name. We've only done three. But I believe that God has been doing really significant things in our midst, you know. People coming to faith, all sorts of good stuff happening around us at this time. But I believe this really is a moment of recommitment for lots of us tonight, either to something new or to something old, you know, to a new title, where we realize tonight that tonight is the night where I need to recommit my life to him or give my life to Jesus for the first time. That maybe this is a moment tonight to say, God, I'm letting go of those titles that have been in my life for the longest time. I have chosen to believe that I'm alone. I've chosen to believe that I'm useless. I've chosen to believe that I can't be accepted. I've chosen to believe that there is nothing for me here. And actually, I think this is a moment tonight where God comes to undo those and says, no, you're accepted. You're loved. That he paid a price for you and he meant it when he did it. It wasn't an accident or a fluke. He did it for you. Or maybe tonight is the night where you feel that actually God's been working on you and the purposes, the things that you're doing with your life, the passions that you hold. And he's coming tonight to redirect those. Maybe you've been serving in something for a very, very long time. And if you're honest, you don't want to be there anymore. You know what it is you're meant to do, but maybe this is the moment to do it. Maybe this, you've never served before. Maybe this is just the moment where God has been calling you, and if you're honest, it's been on your case for a little while, and this is the moment where you say, do you know what, God? I'm going to give myself to that. Because you've given me a new name, Lord, I want to take up your new purpose in my life. Or maybe this is the moment where finally you say that I want a new identity in the Lord. Where you say, you know, I don't want to be known as this or that or whatever, Lord. I want to be known with your identity tonight, God. Maybe this is the moment where you start to say to yourself, Lord, you know, I want you to do everything. I don't just want to give you part of my heart. I don't just want to give you part of my life, Lord. I want to give you it all. And I want to ask God, would you come and work in me? Would you come and take the fears and the failures, the doubts, Lord? Would you take it all? I don't just want the title. I don't just want the purpose. I want it all. Maybe you guys would stand with me. I'm just going to pray. These guys are going to lead into a song. We're going to carry on really in that spirit. And maybe if this for you is a moment, maybe you can just respond whatever way you want. You can hold out your hands. You can hold your hands up if you want. You can kneel. You can bow your head. You can do whatever you want. I'm not going to tell you what to do in this moment. But I'm just going to pray. And then we're going to carry on into worship.